All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And we're smack dab in the middle of the NBA playoffs. A lot of exciting series that have been going on, and just a hell of a lot to talk about with a lot of awards being announced, a lot of stories, and just a lot of playoff action all around. So let's just jump right into it by talking about a couple of series. And let's start with some series that have sort of been riddled with injuries. And that's the Bucks Heat series and the Lakers Grizzly series, both of which had games tonight. The Grizzlies were able to even it up without Ja Morant. So that series is 1-1, and the Bucks Heat is currently ongoing. Seems like the Bucks are going to take this one, even it up as well, even without Giannis
There's,
Antetokounmpo.
was gonna say, there's still a lot of time left, but they're up by 20 right now, so
Yeah, so not looking
we'll see.
likely for a Heat comeback, but I did want to start this by talking about a conversation that has been ongoing because both Ja and Giannis were injured on a play where a player tried to take a charge and they had a tough fall. Giannis landed on his back, Ja landed on his wrist. There's been a lot of conversation in the NBA sort of media and just general discussion about whether the NBA should remove the charge as it could be hazardous to players, well-being and whether it sort of leads itself to injury. So I was wondering what you thought about these discussions and whether the NBA should take this seriously.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I am somebody who's a big believer in the charge as a rule. People always talk about the fact they don't like the NBA because it's too soft, too much scoring, and there needs to be a little more defense. If you take away the charge, there will literally be 150 points scored per game at least. It is that much of an impactful action in an NBA game. And look, players fall all the time. You can't take away every single possible risk of a player getting injured because what you're going to start bubble wrapping your players. You're going to make it so, like instead of hardwood, they're playing on like freaking like rubber or something. Like you can't just like eliminate any sense of risk for NBA players. Like this is still a sport, and in sports, people do get injured. Like
Yeah.
we can't pretend, you know. So no, I'm not a fan of this. The charge is an integral part to defense. That's how a lot of players are defend, right? Like there's a lot of smart, crafty defenders who are small who can't stay in front of a guy necessarily or steal the ball away. But what they do, like a guy like an Austin Reaves, a guy like a even Steph Curry or Chris
Yeah.
Paul, like no, just crafty players. What they do is they'll take the charge. They get in great position, and it's a smart defender's play. It's not for it. Not everyone can do it right, and I think people tend to get injured. When you have a guy like Ja Morant, who's a high bouncer or high flyer, and you get a very tall player in Anthony Davis who's taking the charge, and that just sends Ja even higher, and he falls awkwardly. And you know, that's
Yeah,
just kind of the
because
risk.
one thing about Ja is like literally no matter who he sees in the lane, he's always going to go for that dunk. He could see it like a 9 foot tall guy and he would still try to go for that poster. So I mean, like, I kind of agree with what you're saying here. I think that the charge is an integral piece to NBA defenses. I think that in a game in the modern state of the NBA, which is already critiqued, as you said, for being like too soft, not allowing enough defense. Taking away the charge would lead to these ridiculous stat lines where guys like Giannis, who thrive in the lane, would just average 45, and just wouldn't be able to be guarded really in any way. So I'm fully in agreement with you here. And I think with that, we could just move on to talking about these series. And I guess I'll start with the one we just saw play out. Lakers Grizzlies. This one hurts to talk about.
Let's go, Lakers. Anthony
Lakers.
Davis coming in clutch with 12 points and like 8 rebounds.
So
Yes.
talk to me about this series and how you see it playing out and just what you've seen so far.
I believe, the Lakers in six in this series, and I think that was still about right where I expected them. I was
Yeah.
very excited and surprised when Lakers took game one. And I thought the Lakers really showed a lot of fight, a lot of depth. Rui Hachimura was incredible. Most points off the bench from a Laker in the playoffs since I believe Magic Johnson, so which is incredible. And that was I think 1996, I want to say. But they just showed a lot of fight. They showed that they seemed like the better team. And obviously, like you said, Ja didn't play tonight because of his injury. And the Grizzlies came back and they fired hard. And I think part of the reason that the Lakers came out so flat-footed in the second game was because this entire year, or since the trade deadline, the Lakers have had their backs against the wall. Every single game has been the most important game of the season. There's never been a break. And they finally get into the position where their back isn't against the wall. They're up in the series. They're the one, they have their foot on the Grizzlies' throat, and they kind of like it. And they ease up, and the Grizzlies just got right back up and started swinging because they saw that the Lakers kind of released their foot a little bit off the gas. And this is what happens. And I'm very happy with the Lakers taking one game on the road. They still have home court advantage in this series. But this is going to be a hard-fought one. The Grizzlies aren't going to give this up easy, and they're a good team even without John Morant.
I agree. I think that the what we saw from the Grizzlies tonight was just urgency. They knew that this was a must-win game, and the Lakers just played lackadaisical. They played without a lot of effort, without a lot of focus. I think if the Lakers are going to want to take this series, they're going to need more guys to step up. Obviously, Rui Hachimura has been the standout player for the Lakers, I would say, in these games. You know, he's just contributed so much off the bench as a scorer. His defense has been great. Even though he is undersized, like he has been disrupting Jaren Jackson a little bit when he is matched up onto him. And I think that, you know, where AD sort of lacks, like where AD is not able to cover, Rui Hachimura steps up. And Austin Reaves obviously had that big fourth quarter at the end of game one. But I think that the Lakers are going to need more. My favorite player right now, D'Angelo Russell, is going to need
His
to
favorite.
contribute. I was really disappointed by D'Angelo Russell tonight. I think he had a horrible game. And for a guy who was so productive in the regular season, we need him to step up, or just like the role players to start hitting their shots, like guys like Troy Brown Jr., Malik Beasley. These are the guys that are going to have to, you know, heat up for a couple games, get hot from behind the arc, or just like start contributing, because it can't just be four guys who are, you know, doing it all on the offensive end.
But the thing is, I don't think it's been four guys. Like you're saying, D'Angelo Russell had a great first game. He had 19 points, and he wasn't the most efficient, but he shot 7 for 17 from the field, and was 2-2 from the free throw line, 3 of 9 for 3, which isn't great again. But still, he wasn't like this horrible player, like you say. Yes, the second game was bad, but you didn't lose this game off of D'Angelo Russell. We won the first game because Rui Hachimura and Austin Reaves stepped up. We didn't win the game because of stars. And then in the second game, what we saw again was you can't have your s role players take another game like that. That's very hard for role players to
Sure.
do twice in a row. And the player who needed to step up in this game was very clearly Anthony Davis. Yes, he had a great defensive game still, but he was not rebounding. He was didn't even look that great on defense. In certain cases, he had a lot of blocks, but that doesn't tell you everything. And he had no offensive game, and they kept triple quadruple teaming him even, and he'd kick it out and the Lakers still couldn't find offense. And that's not necessarily on him, because the game plan is get the ball out of Anthony Davis's hands, but he's still gonna find ways to at least make plays for his teammates, and that wasn't happening.
Agree. I think that, you know, you see all the elite big men around the league, Giannis, Embiid, Jokic, they are able to make plays when they're doubled. They're able to impact winning when they don't have the ball in their hands. And I think AD in this game especially, he just looked lost. I think that he looked a little bit disoriented whenever he got double teamed. I didn't see that kind of aggressiveness from him that I would have liked to see. And so, like, Lakers are going to go back home now. I think they need to go 2-0 here, because I think if they split the series again, they're in serious trouble. And I think a lot of that, as you're saying, is very much contingent on Anthony Davis being dominant, being the player that we know he can be. But I also think it's going to take some of the role players to step up. And for the Grizzlies, because we got to mention them a little bit, I think that
Absolutely.
they got to be so happy with this one tonight. They had, you know, everybody across the board step up. Xavier Tillman had like a career night
He had a
tonight.
great game. He
David Roddy hit
so many
some big
offensive
shots.
rebounds. He Xavier Tillman 22 and 13. I mean, that's definitely the most you could ask of him. I mean, coming off of a game where he had, I want to say, like 2 points and four rebounds, like he really showed Anthony Davis that, you know, what he is. And he said, "Hey man, I'm here. And I'm gonna play better than you." And he definitely played better than Anthony Davis,
And you
which
know who else
is
played better than Anthony
sad.
Davis? Jaren Jackson. Jaren Jackson, in my opinion,
Yes.
has looked like Anthony Davis should have looked this whole series. Absolutely
No,
dominant
not in
on
the
the
first
defensive
game.
end.
Not in the first game.
Okay,
Sorry.
maybe I'm
Come
making,
on now.
sorry.
Anthony
Okay,
Davis had
sure.
10 stocks. He had 7 blocks and three steals. You can't tell
Okay,
me,
that's
oh,
fair. That's
Jaren
fair. He
Jackson was
was
better than
dominant
him
the
in the
first
first
game.
game.
That's fair. I'm just saying, Jaren Jackson has played amazing this series. We're going to talk about a little later because he is the reigning defense player of the year now. But I think he's played amazing, and the Grizzlies are going to need his continued greatness along with Ja Morant to come back quick if they're going to want to win this series. But we have so many other series to get to. Don't want to turn this into another Lakers pod. So let's talk about the Bucks Heat. In my opinion, this is not a very interesting series, so I guess we could just talk about it pretty briefly. How much do you think the Giannis injury really impacts this series? Do you see the Heat really making this competitive?
Oh, absolutely. If Giannis is not playing the series, I think the Heat can win it, even though they're down by almost 30 points right now in this game. I can absolutely see the Heat going home. This is not a team to be trifled with. We've talked about this on the last pod, where I thought they were going to stay the 7 seed, but they fell to 8, and I thought they had no chance against the Bucks. And then Giannis got injured, and they really took grasp of game 1. And playoff Jimmy is a real thing. He's gonna, just he was incredible in the first game.
Yeah.
I also believe Duncan Robinson broke his hand, or sorry, it wasn't Duncan Robinson. It was Tyler Herro who broke his hand, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he did.
I think Max Strus has also really stepped up. I'd like to see Bam step it up a little more. But I really do think this team has a very good chance of beating a injury-riddled Milwaukee Bucks team. And I really think they have a good shot at making it to, like, again, the conference finals if Giannis is out. Like, make that very clear.
I think even if Giannis is out, this is still a series that the Heat are going to lose. I don't know. I've lost a lot of faith in the Heat. I guess I don't know. I thought that Bam Adebayo would really step up his game, but to me, he's been extremely underwhelming. I think losing Tyler Herro is a tremendous loss. I can't remember who said it. One analyst was saying that, the Heat losing Herro is a bigger loss to the Heat than the Bucks losing Giannis. And I know that sounds
That is
ridiculous on its
stupid.
face, but think about it. Think about it. The Heat really rely on Herro shooting and his playmaking and just how much he contributes to their offense. And while Giannis is so much for the Bucks on offense and defense, they're still an amazing team without him. They still have two bona fide stars in Jrue Holiday and in Chris
Chris
Middleton.
Middleton.
I blanked on his name for a sec. And you have a defensive player of the year candidate in Brook Lopez. And then you have a very thorough, solid bench, So I think that to a certain extent that statement is a bit true. So I don't think this series is going to be that competitive. I think the Heat might be able to win one at home, but I think this is going to be Bucks in six, if not Bucks in five.
Wow,
With
would
or without
say,
Giannis.
I would say that's a hot take. I believe this series is a 6-game series for Miami, if
Whoa.
without
Whoa,
Giannis,
really?
without Giannis, if
Okay.
Giannis is if Giannis plays probably a 5-game series. This is probably a gentleman's sweep. If Giannis comes back in game 3, I think they could take three more games in a row easily.
Okay, fair
But
enough.
without Young, I think he has that much of an impact. Jimmy Butler is absolutely the best player on the court at any given time, and there's no doubt about that. And
You
that
think he's better
matters in the
than
postseason.
when Giannis is not there, right?
Yeah,
Or are you
no, that's
saying,
what I mean. No,
okay,
when Giannis is not there. Yeah,
they're
no,
going to say like Giannis.
Jimmy Butler is a top 3 NBA player.
I mean, look, I
I'm not
will say
crazy.
Jimmy Butler, everything we talk about him in the postseason is entirely true. That game one performance was absolutely dominant on both ends of the floor. He is a guy who, time and time again, he steps up his game in the postseason and he always elevates. And right now, I would make the case. He is genuinely looking like a top three player in the postseason. Like, I don't think that's even a very controversial statement.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we forget how, like, good certain players are. Like, I feel like we're undervaluing, like, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown because they're playing against the Hawks right now, or we undervalue Jokic because they're playing against the Timberwolves. But I think as far as series that are, like, kind of competitive right now, definitely Jimmy Butler is up there.
Yeah, I mean, just also on both ends of the floor, because like he's also contributing a lot on the defensive end. And I think that the guys that you mentioned aren't really doing the same. I don't think Jokic is really really a defensive stopper in the same way. But let's move
Yeah,
out and
speaking of
talk about,
which,
let's talk about Jokic and his series with the Nuggets versus the Timberwolves. This one we could
this
talk
is
about in like
probably
literally 30 seconds. This is not a very
one of
interesting
the least,
series.
one of the least important series, I think, unless I see Anthony Edwards have like a 50-point game and like they somehow take a game. Like, I feel like this is not a series I care to watch or like anything. I mean, they're already down by 11 points in the first quarter
See, I think
right
this
now.
series would genuinely be kind of interesting if the Timberwolves had Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid. They are so important to their team.
Yes.
McDaniels is arguably the best defender on that team, and Naz Reid just provides so much as a backup center who can stretch the floor, who could take it inside, and just can kind of do it all for you. And so without them, it's just like, why are we even watching this series? I think it's going to be a pretty clear sweep. And
Not only that, but Rudy Gobert is a horrible matchup for Nikola Jokic. That's a nightmare for him. He can't basically is useless in this series. And also, I mean, every single player that the Nuggets are starting, Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, Nikola Jokic, KCP, and Jamal Murray, they're all 3-point shooters. They play a five-out offense, and Rudy Gobert has no chance against that.
Yeah, it's a poor matchup, and the Nuggets are just gonna dominate them. Not much to be said there. Nuggets in four, you agree?
Yeah, Nuggets either in four or five. I mean, I could give the Timberwolves a game to like just absolutely like
Yeah.
dominate from one of their stars. Like Cat has 40 or Anthony Edwards has 40 or something like that.
Yeah, it could be
But
one of
like
those things where it's 3-0, the game's in Minnesota, the Nuggets just come out looking flat, they don't really care. The Timberwolves are just fighting to save some dignity and they take a game and then Nuggets close it out at home.
Exactly.
But
That's like what I see. It like at like worst case for the Nuggets.
yeah.
I think we can close it out there with that series and talk about the next blowout, one of the least interesting series as well. Celtics Hawks. I mean, I think
Such a boring
the
series.
Celtics won the first, this is 2-0 Celtics. I believe they won the first game by like 40 something points. Like just
Yeah.
absolutely ridiculous. Do you have any thoughts on this Atlanta Hawks team and Trae Young and DeJounte Murray?
I mean, we'll talk about this Hawks team after the series, or maybe in the off season, as like, what's next for them? Because there's been conversations around the Hawks organization of like, where do you go from here, right? You traded all those picks and you brought in DeJounte Murray thinking he would really elevate your team to the next level, but you basically just became the most mediocre team in the association. The Hawks don't do anything particularly well. They're very like a mediocre offense, not great defensively, not a fast team, but not a slow team. Like they just don't really do anything well or don't specialize in
They're the
anything.
most average NBA team this season. Yeah, they have the
And
longest streak now of all time of being within one game of 500.
that's crazy.
Yeah,
And they
the most mid team ever.
and Trae Young, just like the step back that he's taken, when you would thought that, bringing in DeJounte Murray would allow him to play off ball, increase his efficiency, and really like the two would complement each other. There's going to be serious questions in the Atlanta front office about like what you can do with this team. Do you think about moving Trae Young? Do you choose between Murray and Young? Like, where do you take this team? What do you do about John Collins? A lot of questions to be answered. But one question that I do not have is the outcome of this series, which is going to be Celtics 4, Hawks 0. So.
Yeah, I think this is a series where the Hawks don't even have a chance to take a game, like zero chance. I think they're already demoralized. I don't think that they think they can win this.
I have a question, Hunter. Do you think the Nets can win a game against the Sixers? Because that series is 2-0 right now.
Yeah, I had that series as my only sweep, I believe, or I think I also had the Celtics Hawks as a sweep potentially. And I stand by that. The Nets are definitely the worst team in the postseason, and obviously we know why, because they traded all their pieces away. And I'm excited for this Nets team, their future. And I think it's great that they have their young guys running it through some playoff experience. And I think that's all they really care about. They're not here to make a run at the title. I think they're here to be like, hey, Nicholas Claxton, we want to see what you can do in the postseason series as the starting big against a guy like Joel Embiid. We just want to see what you can do. Just go out there, show some fight. Hey, Cam Thomas, Mikal Bridges. Be the number one and two guys and show us what you have. And they've they've done pretty good, like, for what they want. Like, I don't think they're going into these games and being like, man, we could totally take the Sixers down, because they know they can't.
Yeah. No,
What
I
are
agree
your
with
thoughts
you
on them?
here. Yeah, I'm totally agree. I think this is good for the young guys to get some run. It's nice to see Mikal Bridges as the number one option in a playoff series, still putting up crazy numbers. We saw Cam Johnson had a big game in game two. He even had that poster dunk on Embiid. But yeah, the Nets are not winning this series. I want to see, though, that I really do want to see Cam Thomas get some run. I don't know what Jacque Vaughn's problem is with playing him, but he has not touched the floor yet in this series. And he's a
It might be
guy
an
who's like,
attitude thing. Who knows?
he's a guy who's liable to go off for 40. We saw it throughout the regular season. So why not at least just give him a chance? I want to see Cam Thomas be a rotational player for this Brooklyn Nets team next year, or at least see him on an NBA roster where he can get some play because he is so talented a player. But yeah, I think that exactly what you said. This team is really like just honestly, like the shouldn't even be here. Like if this team played all 82 games, they would be in the lottery. They would not be a postseason team. But good for them to get some experience. Sixers in four, though. Sixers in four.
Yeah, do you have any comments about the Sixers, or do you think there's not even anything we can say just because the matchup they got was so easy?
I mean, Embiid has still looked dominant. He had that almost a 20-20 game last game.
James Harden has been very nice to watch.
I mean, the last game he had 8 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds. He had a good game one, but Harden, I don't know. He's just been kind of iffy. I guess a positive sign for Philadelphia is that, you know, we've seen Maxey play really well. Tobias Harris has had a couple good games here and there. So there are other options, but yeah, I don't think we can draw too many conclusions because they haven't really been pushed to their limits yet. They
Yeah.
did start out pretty flat though in game two, which is a little troubling. Like you don't want to see that. But of course, the only thing that matters is the end result. So, you know, can't be too unhappy with a win.
They got the dub. All right. I think we should move on to some of the most exciting series, and I think the series we should probably talk the most about. And let's
Definitely.
start with probably my favorite series, and this is the Suns Clippers. Man, what a series. We knew it was going to be a battle.
Lived
And
up to
it
the
came
hype.
out right away with a surprise. Right away, we get Clippers stealing it game one in Phoenix off of a 3-19 Russell Westbrook shooting performance where he makes the winning block and throws the ball out of bounds off Devin Booker while he complains to the referee that Russ fouled him. Just what a great showing. Very happy for Russell Westbrook. Very classic Russell Westbrook win. You know, he just literally the worst shooting night he could possibly have, and he still has a positive impact. And I think I could easily say that he's the best rebounding guard of all time. I think that I would solidify that.
Guard of all time. I have to think about that, but
The best rebounding point guard of all time. I would easily say that. Because
I can't. Okay.
he's not just running around and getting boards. He's crashing the glass like a big, and that's very impressive to me. And obviously, this isn't, you know, love Russell Westbrook time. This is talk about this Suns Clippers series. It's tied at 1-1 right now. Suns got the second game. Kawhi has looked so dominant, and I don't think people have been talking about him enough.
Yeah.
People have been giving Russell Westbrook his flowers for having a great game two from like a statistic, a stats wise, and game one he had that hustle play. And they seem to be like overlooking this ridiculous Kawhi performance. I would argue Kawhi Leonard has been the best player in the postseason and has actually clamped Kevin Durant, like just
Agreed.
grinded
Agreed.
him to a halt. Kevin Durant looks so uncomfortable out there, and it's really disrupted the flow of this Phoenix Suns team because they're very limited on their depth, even though their bench guys have played well for the most part. They're still limited on their depth, and this team only works as well as Kevin Durant.
Yeah, this team goes as far as KD does. And we've seen Kawhi really put the pressure on him. There's this one possession that I'm thinking of. I'm sure you're thinking of the same one where, you know, he's just locking up, gets the steal, and then gets the bucket on the other end. That's exactly what Kawhi can do. He's been doing it on both ends of the floor, just being an absolute menace and just absolutely dominating on the offensive end. Like, really. The Phoenix defense has no answer for Kawhi Leonard. He's doing it from three. He's doing it from mid-range. He's getting to the paint. He's drawing contact. Like, he's doing it all. And, you know, he's really been the offensive powerhouse that led the Clippers to stealing a game on the road. You know, if game one, 38-5-5, game two, 31-7-8. He's the best player in the postseason right now. And I don't think that's controversial. I agree with you. I think though that, you know, also I want to give some credit to Russ, like, because obviously we've criticized him a lot throughout the year, especially when he was on the Lakers. But you have to give him his credit. He has really, really contributed a lot to this Clippers team and how well they've performed in this series. And you also, like, I want to give him credit for his defense. Like, not something I thought I would say, but he's really been like putting the pressure on KD as well, which is crazy when you think about their height differential. You know, he's gotten a couple blocks here and there. He's just been all in his grill. I think that their history is obviously plays a factor in that. But yeah, good. I like what I've seen from Russ and just the Clippers as a whole. They've really been fighting, even though they are short of a star in Paul George. They've been battling against this Phoenix team, and in my opinion, they've looked like the better team throughout most of the series. Obviously, game two, some of Phoenix's firepower just started clicking. Like, not much you can do when KD, Booker, CP3 are all hitting their shots. But I would honestly, the way I'm leaning in this series so far is like maybe the Clippers take this. I don't know.
Maybe
Like,
in seven. It's definitely going to seven, though.
I think it's going seven as well. But
Who do you think has been the most disappointing player for each team?
I would say, for each team,
Let's
that's a tough one.
start with the Suns. I think it's a little harder for the Clippers.
Yeah, for the Suns, I mean, obviously, I mean, I kind of want to say DeAndre Ayton. I think this is a series where he has to be dominant. He's getting matched up with guys like Ivica Zubac or Mason Plumlee, and those are matchups where he should be thriving. He should be getting physical in the paint, you know, throwing it down. He should be using some of his footwork and post moves. But instead, you often see him settle for the mid-range, kind of like AD in a sense. Like, he's a bit of a soft player, in my opinion, or missing putbacks, missing easy layups. And so I think that, you know, the Suns are going to rely on him to get some easy ones when their shots aren't hitting from the perimeter. And when he's not delivering, that's going to lead to a lot of struggles for the Phoenix offense. So
Yeah.
I would probably say DeAndre Ayton for the Suns.
I agree.
Yeah.
I was just
And
gonna quickly comment that DeAndre Ayton, his main job should be controlling the glass. If he's not doing anything on offense, he needs to be able to grab those rebounds. And it's really been a struggle for them, especially on the offense or the defensive glass for them. But the Clippers have been getting a lot of offensive boards. In game two, they had 12 offensive boards to the Suns 7. And that's on DeAndre Ayton. And the same thing happened in game one. That was a big storyline. And you aren't going to win that many games if your rebounding disparity is going to be that much on the offensive glass. But I'll let you go ahead and take where you're going to go for your Clippers player.
Clippers, I'm not sure. Honestly, I've been pretty impressed by everyone on the Clippers. I think that like everyone is kind of doing what you expect of them. They fell short in that game too because I think in order to win this series, like guys are gonna have to step up and not just do what's expected of them. You know, like game one, Eric Gordon had a great game. But you know, guys like Norman Powell or even Bones Highland, these are like kind of spark plugs off the bench that I think need to have some big games. So in terms of disappointments, I'll say maybe the just Clippers bench as a whole, like a couple of those guys are just gonna have to have games where they just take over if the Clippers are gonna wanna have to win this. The thing that the Clippers have on the Suns is their depth. So when it's bench versus bench, you know, that's where those guys need to shine. But
Yeah,
do you have
I'm gonna say
similar picks?
I would say Norman Powell is my disappointment for this series. And I don't think it's anything in particular, but he was just so great during the regular season for this team.
Yeah.
And he hasn't really been doing what I would expect of him in this series so far. He's been a little inefficient from the field. And he's just not been scoring at the rate we're used to seeing him score during the regular season. And I think like you were saying, the bench for them is what's gonna make the difference. And for the Clippers to win the series, their guys need to play above their pay grade. They need to play above and beyond. And they can do that. And I think that starts with Norman Powell.
I agree. I think Norman Powell, like, we've seen him be so impactful off the bench just as a scorer. He's a guy who can light it up from beyond the arc. He's a guy who can, you know, really, he's a very creative finisher and can get to the line really easily. So We need to see some of that if the Clippers are going to win. And coming back home, they have a chance really to get up big in this series. They could go up 2-1, 3-1, and really put the pressure on Phoenix to like fight back home. And so I think a lot of that, yeah, is going to rest on the bench and on Norman Powell because he's that first guy out off the bench. So I guess, like, what have you seen from the big four of Phoenix, though? We talked a little bit about Aiden, but what have you seen from KD, Booker, and CP3?
Sorry, I didn't hear that last thing you said.
Sorry, I had to cough. My bad. But
You're good.
what have you seen? What have you seen from the big four and KD,
Oh,
Booker, and CP3?
they were great in that second game. They were hitting all their shots, and really, I think that's what is going to win them series. That's going to win them games. We talked about like how much offensive firepower they have, and if they're hitting, it's unstoppable because they're all three level scorers. Obviously, DeAndre Ayton isn't, but I'm talking about CP. D Book and Kevin Durant. And Chris Paul, he's looked washed this entire year, but he had a good game too. He I mean, look, he has. I mean, we got to be real. He's on the decline, and this is their best chance with Chris
Yeah.
Paul at point guard, and it's never going to get better for him. And he knows that. And look, he's been more doing a lot more delegating. And I think it's been good that he's taken that step down and been like, okay, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, you guys are a lot better than I am at this point in my career. You guys go and get us the buckets, and I'll just do my best to facilitate for you guys and maybe hit the mid-range jumper every once in a while. And
Yeah.
look, that's a good game plan, but I think compared to a lot of other teams, their game plan's pretty simplistic. It's kind of just like if we're hitting shots, we win, and if we don't hit shots, we lose. Like it kind of feels like that's the Suns, and I'm gonna count more times than not on Devin Booker and Kevin Durant hitting their shots than not.
Yeah, like they just like they're two guys who individually are just prone to take over a game pretty much all the time. And when they're together, it's very hard to contain them. I think the Clippers are actually like probably the best matchup, like, or I guess not the best matchup, but like the hardest matchup, the best matchup like for a team playing against them, just because you have probably one of the best perimeter defenders in the world in Kawhi Leonard, an incredibly deep, well-coached team, and just like a lot of tenacity on that end of the floor. Like Russell Westbrook, he's not the best defender, but he will like stay with you the whole time, especially if it's a guy he has like animosity towards, like Kevin Durant. And so yeah, if you had to predict the way the rest of this series plays out, how do you think it ends up going?
Ooh, I think they'll go split it again 1-1 on the Clippers home court. And I think it's definitely going to 7 in my opinion. And I want the upset. I had the Suns to make being my NBA champions, but give me the Clippers. Give me the goddamn Clippers, man.
Okay. So let just pure hypothetical. So say the Clippers win, like who do you have winning the championship?
Ooh. Because that changes a lot in the West. Because
Does.
in my hypothetical, we would have the at this point looking like the Kings now, which we'll get to in a second. Probably the Kings, the Clippers, hopefully the Lakers and the Nuggets. Honestly, all those teams kind of sound horrible, not gonna lie. Like I think the Clippers, like if Paul George was healthy, could beat any of those teams.
Yeah,
Who
I
knows?
agree with you there. But no, we're venturing off the hypothetical
Yeah.
land, but yeah, no, definitely the series to watch, but also a very entertaining series is Kings Warriors. Kings are up 2-0. So your Warriors sweep pick not aging too well.
Hey, listen, if it did happen though, it was a pretty ballsy pick, but you gotta admit, if the Warriors got both games, you'd be like, damn, Hunter, you were close, man.
So yeah, so if everything was different, your prediction would
Yes.
have been perfect. Yeah, that's a fair
Exactly.
point,
That's
honestly.
what I'm saying.
But okay, big storyline in this game is obviously the Kings winning game one, very dramatic fashion. Wiggins missing an open three, Curry missing the potentially game timing shot, and then game two, Kings basically had the Warriors numbers the whole game. And then a bit of a scuffle or like entanglement between DeMontis Sabonis and Draymond Green. We have to talk about this here because what happened was when I think it was in the third quarter, Domantas Sabonis like and Draymond Green sort of fall to the floor. Draymond gets up, Sabonis grabs his leg, and then Draymond Green basically stomps on him in the ribs and then like walks away. What ends up happening from that is Draymond gets ejected with a flagrant two, Sabonis gets a flagrant one, and then just last night, it was announced that Draymond Green will be suspended for game three in this series, which is obviously a huge loss for the Warriors and just puts so much pressure on the Dubs to get it done at home because going down 0-3 is basically a death sentence. And so, Hunter, I mean, first of all, give some flowers to the Kings for, because you disrespected them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Give my
And
props
then,
to the Kings, especially Malik Monk. I want to give my props to Malik Monk because he's been the difference maker for them in this series, 100%.
I totally agree with you. And then also give me your thoughts on the Sabonis Draymond situation because I know we disagree here.
So I think you could make the argument that the suspension is warranted. I on the or sorry, the ejection, I mean, not the suspension. You can make the argument that the ejection is warranted. I personally don't believe that this is warranted of an ejection. I believe that this should have been an equal punishment case. If not, maybe Draymond's punishment could have been a little more severe because he was definitely the not the re he retaliated, but he made it more aggressive than he ne needed to. But I, at the same time, I do think he put a little something extra on it, but it wasn't so far-fetched from what Sabonis had done to him and like what had preceded this whole thing happening. So I tend to lean towards equal punishment. But I think the suspension is totally unwarranted, in that it kind of is really upsetting as a fan of the NBA. I'm not a Warriors fan. I'm not even necessarily rooting for them in the series because I just want a good series at the end of the day. And this takes away that enjoyment. And I think Warriors fans have seen this storyline time and time again with Draymond. And I think they're fed up with it, and he's gonna have to get paid this summer. And there's just a lot of stuff going on. And who knows what's gonna happen to the Warriors? Especially, this might be the last series we see Steph, Klay, and Draymond together as a trio.
Could be. I want to say though that like, if Warriors fans are mad at the suspensions of Draymond, they should be mad at Draymond for, kicking Steven Adams in the nuts, or like, stomping on Domantas Sabonis. Like these are all his fault. Like he is 100% in the wrong in this Sabonis situation. Yes, Sabonis did grab him, and that warranted some punishment. But to stomp on a player like that, with such aggressiveness, is just completely unwarranted. I
I
don't
will
think
say.
suspension is right, though. Like, I would say, like, look, the flagrant two, he got him ejected. Let them play basketball. Yeah, sorry, you want to say something?
I will say. I think what makes it for me that you could make the case that he should have been ejected was the aftermath after the whole thing happened, and then he went to his bench and started cheering and started doing all this stuff, like the typical Draymond Green, like, or Dylan Brooks kind of. Whatever you want to call it, the drama, I think that warranted him the flagrant two. I don't think the actual physical action of the stomp warranted him the flagrant two, but I think his reaction to the whole situation did.
I mean, I think that I disagree. I think that the stomp was definitely like, if any play is gonna get a flagrant two, stomping on a player's chest is like unnecessary physical content that's like aggravated towards someone. I think though the suspension does come as a result of like just Draymond's reputation. I think that, the league sees Draymond continually doing this and they're like, okay, it's Draymond, we got to suspend him. Because, you had a foul in the Cavs-Knicks series, which we'll talk about, where, Jared Allen goes up really hard foul on Julius Randle, basically tips him over, he falls over at the end of a game, like really nasty spill. Don't think anything really came of that. Maybe it might have been a flagrant one, but like, I think reputation plays a big factor. I did want to bring up one thing though. Some people, in sort of defense of the Warriors, have called out the refs as being like biased towards the Kings. I know J this is something JJ Redick was talking about on, I think, First Take. And I think there's a ridiculous narrative to think that the NBA would be sort of favoring the small market Kings who haven't made the playoffs in 16 years, in like potentially throwing away a LeBron Steph Curry second round, like I don't think there's any merit to that claim. I think that
Especially because the Warriors are the largest franchise in the NBA, and the amount of fans and money and revenue they generate would help the NBA more than the Kings.
exactly. So I think that narrative is ridiculous on its face, and I think there's plenty of other reasons for why the Warriors are struggling. I want to get your opinion on what you think the biggest reason that the Warriors are down 0-2 is.
Well, I think Draymond, you have to talk about his suspension in game two, or sorry, his ejection in game two really did hurt them because they got really close. I think they tied up the game at one point in the fourth quarter, and then it got away from them. And I think Draymond being there changes that whole dynamic because it's way harder to guard Steph Curry when Draymond's out on the floor. You know that connection's incredible. And Klay Thompson obviously is within that too. And they're just so dangerous, the three of them together. So, who knows? They could have won the game if Draymond just didn't do all that stuff. But I'm going to say the biggest reason, the biggest disappointment has been Jordan Poole. He had, what, 4 points in game two, and he played just 15 minutes. He played just 21 minutes in game one and had, what, 17 points, but on very poor, or not super poor shooting, but he was like 4 of 10 from the field. Obviously, they're just not trusting him right now because
Yeah.
he's just not making good decisions, and it's been tough to watch him out there. It really has. The defense, there's no defense. He shoots really like long range shots. Like he plays like Steph Curry would. He's like, I'm Steph Curry 2.0, and he's not Steph Curry 2.0. He's Jordan Poole.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think Jordan Poole, for a guy who was so big for them last year, he was hitting big shots for them in the finals, all throughout the playoffs, and he was really that like third score for them. For him to have this fall off, the Warriors really need him to start making good decisions, to start shooting the ball efficiently, and to just be that guy off the bench that they can trust to handle the ball. Instead, what you've seen is Steve Kerr look toward, Dante DiVincenzo or Moses Moody instead, and just you're not going to win a series like that. I think also the Kings, my opinion, it's been less of the Warriors playing poor because I think that they haven't played their best, but they still played pretty good. I think the Kings have just played phenomenally. Like, talk about De'Aaron Fox. This is a guy who also, in my opinion, is playing like a top five player in the postseason right now. He just absolutely takes over games in the fourth quarter. There's a reason why he won the NBA's first ever Clutch Player of the Year award. He's just absolutely dominant, and he's doing it from all three levels, scoring in the mid-range, the three, driving to the cup. Malik Monk, great. He's playing an insane level. Like, for a guy who was, not even in the rotation for the Lakers last year, to just
He's going to
be,
get a bag.
yeah, he's been playing incredibly.
Hit 32
Sabonis.
points in the first game, 14 of 14 from the free throw line. Like, that's just insane for a guy off the bench.
Sabonis had a great bounce back game in game two. And then obviously guys around the periphery, like I think Harrison Barnes had a few like big dunks that helped spark the Kings. Davion Mitchell's been playing great defense and scoring the ball too. And even Kevin Huerter, his 3-point shooting really unlocks so much for this team. I think our big question for the Kings was whether their offense was going to translate to the postseason and the intensity and the physicality of the playoffs. And I think you just have to say that it has.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, they've let the game come to them, and it hasn't really slowed down. I thought it would slow down a lot more than it has, but I think that's also part of playing against the Warriors because they're not necessarily a super big team.
Yeah.
And I think the style of play, the Warriors also that something, and I'm jumping here, but the Warriors' turnovers is killer. And Steve Kerr, in an interview in the first quarter of last game, said like he was asked, oh, you guys already have like six or some seven turnovers or something. Are you concerned about the turnovers? And he was like, no, I think we're fine on the turnovers or something. He said something along those lines. And then they continually turned the ball over, and that lost them the game. Absolutely, the turnovers lost them the game, not just the poor play of Jordan Poole. Like, if I had to notch it up to like something that you can talk about the whole team, the Warriors have always been a team where it's like, oh, the turnovers are going to come with the style of play and the fast offense and just trying to read two moves ahead. But you're never going to win a game. Like, if you're going to have 25 turnovers and your opponent has 10.
I agree with you there. Turnovers have been a big problem for them, and they're gonna have to ease up on those if they want to win the series. I guess, Hunter, predict the series. How do you think it's playing out?
Ooh, I'm gonna take Warriors still. I'm still taking the Warriors in the series. I've for all the crap I've talked about them, I'm sticking with my gut, sticking with my pick. But I think we're gonna see a Steph and Klay masterclass in game three. No Draymond. I really do think they'll combine for something like 80 points or something crazy. I think Steph will have one of the best games of his postseason career ever. I really am expecting big things of them, especially being back at Shea Center. I think these Warriors fans are ready to provide their team the support they absolutely need right now. Warriors in six. I think they'll do a sweep. Sweeping them. I'm taking 4 games 0 again.
Yeah, okay. Just to be entertaining, I'm gonna take Kings in seven. I think that, Warriors will win at home, but I think Kings will close it out in Sacramento. I think
That's
De'Aaron
fair.
Fox, just too good of a closer. Let's keep it moving though, and let's talk about Knicks Cavs, because this is a series that's now also tied 1-1. We've seen Jalen Brunson and Donovan Mitchell go head to head. I guess what have you seen from this series? I guess just who you think's winning this one.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the other ones that's really hard to predict. I was really surprised when the Knicks came out. They played great in game one. I mean, what it looks like to me on the Cavs end is Donovan Mitchell is their entire offense. Like, at least in game one, it seemed that way. Game two, Darius Garland definitely stepped it up. But in game one, it was kind of just the Donovan Mitchell show. Everybody else play defense and we'll try to win off of that. And that did not work. And then obviously they changed their game plan up. Darius Garland steps it up. Donovan Mitchell had an okay game. And they need both of them to be playing well to win these games.
I
Both
wouldn't say
Donovan
he had an
Mitchell and
okay
Darius
game.
Garland.
I mean, dude, he had like 19 assists or something like that.
Oh, sorry. I think he had, let me check.
13.
13 assists.
Career
So
high in
I that
assists.
that's a, yeah, that's that is a good game. I will say he did his job well. And I think they need both of their guys to be on. Not to be competitive, but to win games. I think it's really hard for them because they have very few other sources of offense. Caris LeVert has been great for them, but I don't think you can manage to win games with just one of your two stars playing good defense or offense because you know that Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, Isaac Okoro, they're going to carry you on the defensive end of the ball. And they've been doing a really good job of shutting down Julius Randle. I think it's been a really hard series for him. But I do think Jalen Brunson has been incredible as well. He's been the difference maker for this team, as well as Josh Hart. I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to Josh Hart in this series. I believe in game one that he made some really clutch plays down the stretch. I always got to give love to my former Laker players, in Malik Monk and Josh Hart. This is one I actually didn't get to catch game two, so I'm kind of at a loss for certain things. Unfortunately, I had a finance test tonight, but it's over, and now I can focus back on the NBA.
You can focus on
I
what's
know I'm going all
important.
over the place.
You can put that
AS.
silly education stuff aside and focus on the
Yeah,
NBA. But
but
I don't know
let me
if I
get back
fully
on
agree.
track.
I wanted to just say, I think Julius Randle's actually had a pretty good series so far. I think that his game,
Interesting.
the box score doesn't always reflect it, but he's been getting a lot of big rebounds, making a lot of big time shots, and really just
Yeah,
setting the
well, game
pace
one,
and the
he did it.
tone.
He did.
Setting the tone for this Knicks team. I want to say though that I think for the Cavs, their biggest struggle, I think, is just going to be what to do with the wing position. This is, I guess, something I didn't really consider, didn't factor too much. But, they have Caris LeVert playing big minutes. They're running Chetty Osman. Danny Green got some run in game two, and when you're
Yeah,
relying on
like he got
Danny
played like
Green.
20 minutes.
Yeah. And, Isaac Okoro, his offense basically has made him unplayable in this series. And so I think this is where the Knicks are really going to have an edge because they have good wings in, obviously, Randle, in Hart. I even think that, Barrett could maybe
He's
find a
really
little bit.
struggled.
Yeah, if he could find a little bit though, then that's a potential weakness that the Knicks can exploit. I guess it just
The difference
extrapolating to
bigger for them.
this. Or sorry, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No,
I was going to
I was
say
just gonna say. I think
extrapolating. I'm sorry, you go
that
ahead. You go ahead.
Okay. I think the difference for the Knicks in their ability to win this series is definitely dependent on RJ Barrett, because like you were saying, the Cavs are already weak at that wing position, and if the Knicks come out with another wing like that's providing good offense, it's going to be really tough for them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's tough though to see RJ Barrett continually struggle. And if he keeps like letting the Knicks down, there's going to be serious questions about, just I guess like him as a player. Like, because we've been talking about like when RJ Barrett, his shot gets more consistent, when he's able to develop his offensive game more. And it just seems like we keep having the same conversation over and over. But who do you have winning this series?
I think Cavs in seven is a good pick.
I got Cavs in six. I think that, for the Knicks, I think that they just don't have enough pieces. I like Brunson, but he really can't do it all. And I think that RJ is not really that third guy. And I think they struggle to find that guy. I think that some days it's quickly, some days it's Grimes. But
Some days it's Hart,
overall,
even.
some days it is. But in terms of that guy, those guys that are really going to elevate your team, I think that the Cavs just have more. They just have more pieces. And I think
Also, what do
Mitchell
you think?
as a star is just, far beyond anyone in the series.
Sorry, I was just gonna add, what do you think of Derrick Rose getting DNP coaches' decisions in the series?
Look, I've talked to Knicks fans about this, and Thibodeau just kind of seems to be a mutual understanding thing. Like, he just doesn't fit this team and what they want. Seems kind of, to me, to put it in Lakers terms, like Malik Monk or Lonnie Walker on this team, like a perfectly serviceable NBA player who just doesn't fit either the team or the culture or the system. And so it's just an unfortunate situation all around.
Yeah, but I feel like if you're running RJ Barrett, you could definitely run Derrick Rose.
Yeah, I mean, considering what he did
Yeah.
for them 2 years ago in the playoffs, where he was their best player, like, might be worth a
Exactly.
shot. But with that, I think we've covered all the series so far in the playoffs. Let's talk about the award races because we didn't really get to do our predictions, but and two awards have already been announced, but we can predict the rest of the awards or just give our picks, not predict. So far, Jaren Jackson Jr. is the Defensive Player of the Year. Mike Brown for the Sacramento Kings is the Coach of the Year, his second time winning. He won, I think, in 2008 with LeBron on the Cavs. And then De'Aaron Fox won Clutch Player of the Year. So, Hunter, briefly, like, just give me your thoughts on these ones.
I think that Mike Brown absolutely was the one who deserved Coach of the
Yeah,
Year.
he was unanimous, by the way.
He definitely should have been, because the Kings were a team that were continually underestimated, and they're still being underestimated. Look, I continually underestimate them. I still have the Warriors in six, which means that I still have no trust in them, and they keep proving everyone wrong. And I hope they do keep proving me wrong, because it's actually really cool to watch for their franchise. And I think Mike Brown has come in and set the culture and the tone, like the whole atmosphere, like the light, the beam, the like the chain around the neck, like for the best player. Like, I think all that stuff
Yeah.
is it starts with Mike Brown. De'Aaron Fox definitely deserves Clutch Player of the Year, because he was the guy who's scoring the most clutch points. I think it's as simple as that, and he deserved it. I mean, I don't think you have to look into it too much. He was just that guy. I think it's just a weird award, though. Like, I don't think it has any real meaning, and I don't think players will ever really care that much about it. I think it's kind of just like a
Yeah.
cool thing.
Agreed.
And then I know you do not like the Jaren Jackson Jr. pick,
I'm not
but
crazy about it.
I also really do like Brook Lopez for this pick. But Jaren Jackson Jr. definitely has a great argument to be made. He led the league in blocks by a long shot per game. I think it was like 3.2 per game, and Brook Lopez was sitting around like 2.2 or something like that. So it's like a whole more block per game than Brook Lopez. And the Grizzlies were a great defensive team, and there were a lot of games where Ja wasn't there, and he still stepped up, and he was that guy.
That's fair, but I don't think that their offensive output should play any impact
No,
on
I'm
their.
saying that guy in general, in on
Okay,
defense.
fair enough. I just think, okay, I think Brook Lopez just had a better year on defense. Just what I've seen from him, how he's able to lock down other teams' bigs. Obviously, you had that whole scandal with Jaren Jackson Jr. and like the Memphis scorekeeper I know that there was, it was kind of a muddied situation, but
It was all
you know,
fake.
it wasn't fake. There was some merit to it, but it just maybe was not as extreme as people were saying. But overall, I just think that Jaren Jackson Jr. did not have as good of a defensive season as Brook Lopez. It's that simple. But I guess we got to keep it moving because this is already a long episode. Let's do a quick speed round. Just give me your picks for these awards. So, Rookie of the Year,
I'll do the same for you after. Paulo, no question.
Sixth Man of the Year,
I'll go Malcolm Brogdon.
Most Improved Player,
Shea.
MVP.
Giannis.
Okay, sure. Decent picks,
I
decent picks.
Giannis has been my MVP the entire time. I've said this before, but let me get your speed run. Okay, he got Rookie of the Year.
Go Paolo.
Okay. Sixth Man of the Year.
I'll go Brogdon as well.
Most Improved.
Lauri Markkanen, easily. Role player
Okay.
to an all-star? Come on.
MVP.
I'll go Embiid here. I think that, you know, he's been the best player.
Okay, well, we don't have to get into it too much, but I just want to do the most improved player one because I think that was
Sure.
interesting.
Yeah.
Why? I think Shea will win this one. I really do think he will. Why do you think that Laurie deserves it over Shea?
Because last year and the years prior, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was already an amazing player. Like last year, you want to look at the numbers, right? Let's just pull up Shai. I just don't have them off the top of my head, but let's just pull them up real quick. Shai's stats, because I promise you that, you know, his numbers are going to be insane. Yeah, last season he averaged 25, you know, and to
Yeah, but
jump to 31.
25 to 31 is a big jump.
It's a big jump, but guess what? It's not as big as a role player averaging 15 to go to 25 and to become an all-star and a one of the best big men, like big power forwards in the league, right? Lauri Markkanen made that jump from a guy who's always a little bit underwhelming to a guy who's a bona fide star.
But Shea went from being a player who puts up 25 points on the useless team to a guy that led his team to a winning record and had impactful basketball. And I could argue it also could have been a clutch player of the year.
But he already did that. Like he averaged 24 on a playoff team, on an actual playoff team, in 2021.
With Chris
Or,
Paul, yeah.
well,
That
yeah,
was
but you know what I'm
2020.
saying? Like, okay, and well, still, he averaged 19. That's fair. That's fair. Well, it was 2020. You are right. But still, like he's been improving every single year, and I think the jump is just not as big.
Well, I tend to disagree. I think the jump from 25 to 31 is bigger than you'd think. It's a very big jump. Going from averaging something in the 20s to the 30s points per game is a big deal, and I think the winning has to be involved. The Jazz were winning. If the Jazz had kept winning at the rate they were, or like had been a play-in team or anything like that, I would have given it to Lauri, but I value the winning too.
But you also got to understand, like, across the board, Lauri Markkanen improved. Like, he went from a guy shooting 35% from three last year to almost 40% this year. He upped his rebounds to almost nine a game. Like, he's a guy who just, like,
And
cranked it up across the board.
how much has his usage increased?
I can't see, but obviously it's increased
It's
a bit.
increased probably by double.
Okay, fair, but he's doing it on good efficiency. So,
Yeah,
like,
that's true. I think it's close. I think it's close, but I give it to Shea. All right,
okay,
let's move
agree.
on to
Yeah.
the NBA player pool, which is a really interesting thing the NBA decided to do this year, where they pulled 100 players and asked them a really funny question, actually. Who is the most overrated NBA player? And I'll let you take it away from here, Alpha, because you're
Yeah,
the one
so
who
here are
leads
the
it.
results in terms of like from like 1 through 5 in terms of like most voted. So number one, Trae Young. Number two, Julius Randle. Number three, Pascal Siakam. Number four, Jimmy Butler. And number five, Rudy Gobert. So what strikes out, what jumps out to you, Hunter?
Jimmy Butler being on this list is very shocking. I think the other four I can see, especially Trae Young. I think a lot of people dislike Trae Young. But
Yeah.
man, for Jimmy Butler to be disrespected like that by his peers, I think is very surprising, considering he's shown time and time again that he is that guy.
Yeah, I mean, look at the postseason right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think people are mad that they just can't sleep with the Rachel Nichols.
That's hilarious. But Yeah, no, I think I agree. I think that Julius Randle here is interesting but understandable. And Rudy Gobert is honestly, like, I think there was a quote about it. It's like he's 7'3". He besides just blocking shots, like he literally can't do anything else. So I
Yeah, he
honestly
literally
understand
misses
it.
2 foot jump shots.
I honestly agree with a good amount of this list.
I
Like,
feel like Rudy Gobert should be higher, and I feel that Julius Randle should be a little lower. Maybe even Pascal Siakam as well.
agreed. Fully agree with you there. They also asked the players about the best defender and also 1 through 5, Jrue Holiday, Lu Dort, Brook Lopez, Marcus Smart, Bam Adebayo. So
That's
what do you
still crazy
think?
that Jrue Holiday doesn't want a DPOY. That's a crime.
Isn't it crazy? Because you know
That's
what's
a
crazy? You
crime.
ask every single star in the NBA, like I know Damian Lillard, when he's asked this question, he always says Jrue Holiday for like who's the best defender in the NBA. Jrue Holiday will never get the recognition, he'll never get the awards, but he is easily one of the best defenders in the NBA every single night. And so, like, I'm glad to see that this poll reflects that and that internally NBA players feel the same way.
Do you think that Kawhi Leonard would be on here if he played more?
Probably, probably. I think that without having the list, let me actually check the list to see if he's on there because I feel like, you know, he would probably
I feel like
be
if Kawhi was playing, he'd be number two, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
'Cause I mean, look what he's doing to freaking Kevin Durant.
he's there, but he's toward the bottom. Like guys but not on this list, like Jaden McDaniels, Giannis, Jaren Jackson Jr., Draymond, Evan Mobley, Mikal Bridges is on there too.
Also, it's interesting that Anthony Davis has, like, you didn't mention his name.
He's not on the list.
Yeah, that's interesting as well. But I think this list makes sense to me. I think surprising would I'd say Lu Dort being number two is I think a little high. I definitely think he's one of the top defenders, but two, I'm surprised that NBA players think that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I guess finally, the last question he asked was, who's the greatest player of all time? And the results came in. 58.3% Michael Jordan, 33% Bron, and 6.8% Kobe.
I think you're forgetting the most important one, 1% T-Mac.
Yes, I think it was like some decimal percentage, like 0.5 or something like voted Tracy McGrady as the greatest player of all time. Not sure if that player was on substances, maybe, or maybe if that
if
player was simply Tracy McGrady in a
they
mustache, but
Yes.
yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting the results of this. I mean, I probably expected MJ edge out LeBron for sure. I think probably a lot of the older players are going to say Jordan. Some of the younger guys coming, they're going to say Bron. And, always nice to see Kobe up there.
I think that one thing about this is like sort of mythology surrounding Jordan or Kobe because players can play against Bron. You know, when they go up against the Lakers, they're probably playing a Bron that's either coasting or not really like playing at 100%. And so maybe that affects their perception of him, but they'll never play against Jordan, never play against Kobe. And so, you know, that might play a factor. But with that, it's a good place to call this episode. It was a long one, but a good one. Make sure you tune in next week as we continue covering the NBA playoffs. And yeah, see you all then. Take care.
Peace.